everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the HockeyThinkTank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. What an episode we have for you guys here today. We are bringing on Mike Kelly, who is an unbelievable TV personality and unbelievable when it comes to analytics in hockey. He's a great follow on social media. He works for the company Sport Logic, which is one of the leading sports analytics companies out there. You can find him on TV, on NHL Network, and a lot of other places. This was a fantastic, fantastic conversation. But before we do get over to Mike, let's bring on another fantastic guy in the talent of the podcast, Jeffrey Lovecchio. Vex, what's shaking today, my man?
Not much. I loved this convo because got a little meat out between my ears and got into the analytic side. I'm basically an analyst now, so this is pretty fun.
That's what we actually discovered on the podcast, was that yeah, you are an analyst. So
I actually have done some analyzing this or that. I don't know if anybody's seen that movie. Great movies.
Analyze This was a phenomenal movie.
I know you love those movies. We used to watch it at your house. Yeah. Dude, Mike is an absolute beauty. He was awesome. He was awesome. Made me laugh a couple of times and also let me ask some questions, because I'm pretty green about this stuff. You know, like, this wasn't like, obviously, like, simplistic analytics, you know, were being used, and it was more like coaches doing it now, but not like, you know, they are now. And so this was really cool for me to hear.
He's unreal. And if you're not following him on Twitter, like, he's an unbelievable follow. I learn a lot from his stuff that he puts out there, and he does such a phenomenal job of taking kind of like the complex and making it tangible and making it understandable for everybody to kind of understand what's going on within the game, because there's a game within the game and there's a story to be told, and data and analytics have shown now that they can really help to paint that picture, and you can use it as a coach. You can use it as a player. He's got some really cool stories about some players that he's worked with in the past and how he's helped them to be able to, through analytics and through some data, figure some things out with their game and add value. And so it's really, really, really cool conversation. And yeah, I've been a fan of his for a long time. So it was really fun to have him out on here.
Yeah, dude. I mean, really awesome. And I feel like, you know, I don't want to say the smarter that I get, the more wise I get, because wisdom comes with, you know, experience and age.
You say, you mean the older you get,
Well, what I was trying to say is, sorry, my dogs are barking. I was trying to keep it off the mic. Sorry, guys. People that can break down the complicated into simple terms that more people can digest and understand, that is a very, very valuable skill. You know, Mike Boyle talks about this all the time. Obviously, we've had him on the podcast. He's one of my biggest role models in what I do now. But like, people just use big words and, you know, like, whatever, but like, he's able to break these things down, Mike, into more digestible terms for everyone else and understandable. And that's so important. And I guess I think that's why a lot of older hockey people, you know, when analytics first started becoming so prevalent and popular, is that they were worried like, oh, I'm not up with the times. I don't know how to use this stuff and use it to my advantage. And as we broke down very early in this episode, the what, the how, the why, the when, it's really cool. And it's just another tool to allow you to be a better player, a better team, a better coach, a better organization, whatever it may be.
Totally. Totally. It's great how analytics has become a little bit more mainstream and a little bit more accepted in all of sports. And I think a reason for that is because you're seeing teams be successful that have incorporated analytics into their game planning and their strategy, and not even just to that, but just player evaluation and scouting and stuff. So yeah, this was a really, really cool conversation. He gets into some fun stories about some individuals that have approached him, guys like Gabe Landeskog, talk about some teams, some coaches that he's worked with and spoken to. And yeah, just, you know what, like, it's a big part of the game now. It's a big part of not just sports, but business. When you can have data and you can have concrete information that can help you do your job And you don't have to use it like gospel. I think the best people can take what's important from all the information that they get and use it in a way that that is tangible with the people that they're working with. And he actually has, it's really interesting, a quote on his Twitter profile that is really, really unique and interesting. And the quote is, "Why tell people what you think when you can tell them what you know?" Right? Like, and that's kind of the gist of why analytics is important. It takes some of the subjectivity out of certain things. Subjectivity and objectivity are both important when it comes to making decisions. But at the end of the day, like when you have something that can back up why you're doing stuff, it can help to create buy-in. It can help you to create more efficient processes, which ultimately makes you as an individual or as a team much better.
Love that. Absolutely love that. I love that quote too. That's unreal. This guy's a beauty.
What was the quote that he used? Something about a fish in a tree. That was a really good one too.
Well, have you never heard that one?
I've never heard that one. No,
I feel like Nichols put that on his Instagram too.
Has he?
I think it's, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will always think it's an idiot or something like that, you know?
Yeah, that was it. Sure.
That's great. But I mean, that's the importance right there of kind of breaking things down into simpler terms. And that's basically what the analytics does and shows you the different segments of the game where you can get better or things that you're doing really well. So it's like, wow, this is my strength. And you know, you might know it's a strength, but you might not know that it's like really caught that strength, you know, whatever it is, that's leading to your offensive output, you know? So like the more you do that, the better you are. So that's how I think the, how you can use analytics. So I think it's a great episode. I think a lot of people are going to get, you know, dig into analytics more after this episode.
I'm going to have to take some screenshots too, because your face on a few of like the points that he made was unbelievable. I'll have to do that and post it. It was like, huh?
And then he did it too. It was awesome. Yeah, that was great. Had me laughing. I love it.
Yeah, for sure. So we won't waste any more time. But yeah, this was a fantastic conversation. Before we do get over to Mike, have some people to thank. Gelsticks.com, GELSticks.com is our title sponsor. Now is an unbelievable time of year to get a gel stick, whether it's a hockey stick, a lacrosse stick, or a golf club, and you can go. It's a weighted training aid that can help you with your shot, swing, whatever it may be. So again, go to gelsticks.com and use the coupon code ThinkTank, one word, and you will get a discount on your weighted training stick.
Also want to thank Train Heroic. That's where all of my training is done, from all of the junior teams and college teams that I work with online. They train them all season long. If you're a junior coach, midget coach, organization looking to get very, very quality online training for a fraction of the price, reach out to me, please. Like every season it grows how many organizations and teams I work with. There's a reason, because it's awesome. Videos and demonstrations of me coaching everything. It's not just a PDF, old school piece of garbage. So just want to thank Train Heroic. Also want to thank Cured Nutrition. Started working with them a few months ago. Absolutely love them. If anybody's looking to just function on a higher level, CBD is massively important. It's been extremely helpful to me, especially somebody who's had 14 concussions. I use my CBD twice a day. I use the dropper, and I either use the morning mushroom caps, or I will alternate that with the Zen nightly CBD pills as well. So if you're looking to get into the CBD game, or if you just have questions, like reach out to me. Seriously, I've been using CBD since my last year pro, so going on 5 years now. And I literally promise you, when you use good CBD, you 100% notice a difference in your cognitive ability, sleeping better, appetite. There's a lot of different reasons why people feel different things. And there's a lot of science behind that. And I can go through that with you if you have any questions. So don't be afraid to reach out to me. That's curednutrition.com. And my code is GMBM.
There you go. And thank you to icehockeysystems.com, your premier site for all your hockey education needs. And we have partnered with them to do an associations platform where you can get this for every single coach and every single parent within your organization. They have so many great tools, like a drill drawing tool where you can draw up your drills, you can store it, file all your practice plans, send it out to all your coaches, send it out to all your players, just so you have, you know, some data to be able to help you make your practices and game planning much, much better. So go to icehockeysystems.com, look for the associations tab, and get this today. Also, thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you for tuning in every week. And we so appreciate you. One of the things Vex and I are starting to do now towards the end of our intros is read a review. And if, Vex, we read your review, reach out to Vex on social media and he will give you a train heroic.
And the person who we read last week, they reached out to me. And the mom, the goalie mom, and I sent her our hip mobility. So that was really cool.
All right. Okay. So this week we want to thank T. Grace Man, who sent us one, and he said, "I am a grandfather and far removed from those fun days playing hockey on the driveway year round and on local ponds in winter in suburban Buffalo. But the breadth and depth of topics covered here with hockey as a focal point keep me coming back to listen each week. Working through old podcasts too, as I have found this one about 3 months ago. Some of these gems are the best podcasts I have ever listened to. Phenomenal interviews, and really enjoy the hosts here as they support all of us get better at what we do. Thanks, guys, for what you do. Appreciate your honesty and humility. Keep up the good work. I will be listening and sharing these with family and friends."
Wow.
So, T. Grace Man, wow, that just hits the heartstrings a little bit. Thank you so much for that feedback. Again, we really appreciate all feedback. We want to get better too as podcast hosts, as people, as coaches. And so, yeah, reach out to us.
Some of us.
And so, yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for everybody that leaves ratings and reviews. Again, it helps us to reach more people, and we want to have as big of a positive impact with as many people as we can in the hockey world and outside of the hockey world as well. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for continuing to support us. I think a big reason why we've blown up the way we have is the type of guests that we bring on. And Mike Kelly is no different. This was a phenomenal. I feel like I've said phenomenal way too many times on this podcast so far. Either way, it was a great podcast. So without further ado, here we go with Mike Kelly. We are so excited to have on this episode of the podcast, he's up in Montreal, Quebec. It's Mike Kelly. Mike, how you doing today?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on. I follow your account and really always find it interesting. So happy to join you.
For sure. And we follow your account as well. And just such great information. If you're not following Mike on social media, definitely hit that follow button, because he always puts out a lot of awesome analytic information that I've used. I enjoy it, entertains me, and a lot of great stuff. So we're really excited to get you on the podcast. And Vex, we haven't really talked much, and we're 200 whatever episodes in now, and we haven't talked much analytic stuff, have we?
No, we really haven't. So I'm excited. I'm excited for this one. I admittedly don't know a lot about, diving into all of the details of what you do. So this is going to be exciting for me. I'm going to learn a lot on this one.
You know, just to get started, we love to introduce our guests to our following here and all the people that are listening. And we're big believers that passion is what drives the game of hockey, and you're a passionate hockey guy, but wanted to know, let's bring it way back to how you fell in love with the sport back in the day. So, you know, if you could tell us a little bit about how you grew up and how you grew up in this great game of hockey and how you fell in love with it, that would be great.
Yeah, pretty cliche story. Small town Ontario kid in Canada, and hockey was just, it's everywhere, right? So started playing when I was a kid. That kind of early 90s, I guess, getting into it. I remember one of my first favorite teams as a kid was the Canucks in the early 90s, and Pavel Bure was my favorite player. They went to the Cup Final in 94, so that was fun to watch. Just played it, always loved it. My parents, both my mother and father, they still watch hockey games all the time. So it was just kind of a thing in our house, and all my friends played, and you know, realized when I was kind of mid-teens that life in the NHL was probably not going to be for me on the ice anyways. So I was, you know, better at baseball than hockey. And I love both of those sports. But so I kept going with baseball for a while. But it's pretty much that cliche Canadian story of just kids surrounded by hockey, loves hockey.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Had a lot of those on here. So that's awesome. I'm actually, you go back to those Vancouver Canucks days with Pavel Bure. I'm reading Brian Burke's book right now. And he talks
about. That's a good one.
Oh, it's unreal. So good. Yeah. So refreshing. Just so upfront and honest. And just crazy stories about how those teams got put together. And, you know, with that, you know, you talk about small town Canada type stuff. You know, you got into analytics. What was it that got you into kind of like the game behind the game and telling a story from a data driven point of view? Because it's, I would say a little bit more mainstream now, but I have to imagine that when you fell in love with that side of the game, it wasn't really something that many people talked about, especially at, you know, the youth levels, but also the, you know, the professional levels and stuff like that. So what got you interested in the data side of the game?
Yeah. Always been interested in numbers from the time I was a kid. You know, I remember I'd play mini sticks against the wall and keep track of stats and stuff like, yeah, I was super fun and had a ton of friends. But like I'd come up with all this stuff. Right. And I loved looking at stats when I was a kid and the newspaper, all that stuff. So it was always, I think, just naturally inquisitive person. Which drove a lot of my teachers crazy and my parents, I'm sure too, you know, like, here, Mike, this is what it is. Why? You know, the sky's blue. Why? Just always wanting to try to understand things. So that's always been in me, I guess. And getting into the data side of hockey beyond just kind of being interested in stats and everything growing up, about 9 years ago, I was working in television as a host at the NHL Network. And you know, my job was working with the analysts on the desk, as you guys see all the time. And I just wanted to be able to bring something more to the conversation than, you know, thank you very much. When we come back, we'll have this and whatever. So, you know, I didn't think I could cruise by on TV with my looks for sure. So figured I'd try to add something to the table.
That's what Jeff tries to do. It's unfortunate. audio-only podcast here. Exactly. Calls himself the hot guy in the podcast. So
self-proclaimed, not a big deal.
Yeah. So when I was doing that, I kind of started digging around and who's tracking interesting information and, you know, saw some analytics companies that were doing some pretty interesting work, pretty kind of underground at the time. Cause as you said, there's not a lot going on publicly with this stuff other than the analytics community, the publicly available data, which I had been kind of going through as well. But caught on to some of these companies doing this, you know, their own private tracking. And shortly thereafter, started working with SportLogic, became so interested in it and such a believer in where this was going that I joined SportLogic full time and have been there for about 7 years and, you know, do some other work as well as, you know, NHL Network, et cetera. But that's how I got into it. I saw what they were doing. And I, you know, through talking to people in hockey, saw that the conversations going on in hockey were really a lot different than the conversations going on in the newspapers and on television. And so I just really was fascinated by that side of it and learning how talent evaluators, people in the game, talk about the game and how they view the game and trying to apply numbers to it that way.
That's really interesting. And SportLogic, for everybody that doesn't know, it's a fantastic website, LOGIQ, right? SportLogic. And so I would encourage you to go there. But one of the things, and we were talking about this before we came on, but I know that you guys have done some of this stuff. And I feel like a lot of people, when they think about analytics, it's more of, okay, there's some nerds that every NHL team has, you know, up in the 300 level suites that are just kind of crunching numbers and then they'll take it down to the coaches and stuff. But it's so much more than that. And you've actually done a lot of work with like agents and players on player development type stuff and things like that. So if you can just talk a little bit about SportLogic and some of the interesting things that you're doing, you know, maybe to help grow the game of hockey in making players better.
Yeah. So our company, we work with a majority of the teams in the NHL as a third party data supplier. So they would get access to the information that we track, you know, different teams use it in different ways and et cetera. So we work on the professional side that way. We work with official data supplier to the Swedish Hockey League. We work with a number of other leagues as well, international hockey outside the NHL itself also. So there's that side of it where the teams are taking the information, using it in a number of different ways. Myself, I work with a lot of our media partners and clients. But like you said, I've had people reach out and done some stuff in the past with players from a development standpoint, with agents on, you know, contract negotiation work, some projects with coaches just on, you know, trying to apply numbers to what they're doing. What can we prove and show has the most meaningful and impactful results in a game? If you know that goals come from a certain area or certain scoring chance types are more valuable, well, the coach is interested to know how can we create those, right? And in all of those scenarios, I have had really valuable back and forth conversations. It's not, well, here's what the data says, so that's what it is, figure it out. And it's not, well, here's what my eye test says, so the numbers, you know, don't capture that. When you work with people that are open-minded on both sides, you can provide each other with a ton of value. And that's where I've had, I think, some of the most rewarding work that I've done in hockey is, you know, working with a coach and saying, you know, hey, okay, this is our team. This is the type of team we have, the type of players we have. How can we get the most out of them? How can we get the most out of this player working within what they can and can't do for us? There are things that we know are true about the game of hockey just from having enough of a sample size and understanding that, yes, this information is significant, it's meaningful. And then you just work with whoever you're working with on how to best apply it.
I love that. I'm a big proponent of answering questions in like the right order. So I like that you are able to show them the what, as in like what is working, what isn't working. And then to be able to go to a coach who's open-minded and then come up with a plan more of on, okay, well, how? So like you said, just for example, for people listening, like, well, you know, what are we scoring? When we score, where are the chances coming from? Where are they coming from? Okay, they're all coming from this area. Okay, coach, this is what is happening on the ice when you score. Now, how do we create those situations? How do we create an offense around players that get that type of situation? Mm-hmm. How do we create a practice that works on these skills where we're seeing where we're scoring, you know? So I think that's so cool. And I remember when analytics started becoming a part of the game and like so many people like, you know, oh, these nerds in the upper deck, you know, just sitting up there taking notes and stuff. But it's like, no, like be open-minded. And obviously the game is now with where you are in all these different leagues and who you're working with. And, you know, for people who are, do you see a lot of polarization between like old school people that it's like just coach and watch it? And then the other side where it's like, well, you can use analytics and if you're using them in the right way.
Yeah. Not as much as in the past, for sure. There's still an element of, okay, I don't know much about this, but I'd like to know more, which is great. Like not everybody's an expert now just because it's more prevalent, but the open-mindedness is absolutely there. And it should be. You know, what I tell people all the time is it's information. That's all it is. You know, imagine being a real estate agent. Imagine you're going to buy a house. Are you going to walk into the house, look around, say, I've lived in houses my whole life. I like the look of this house. I'm going to buy it. you're probably going to want to get it inspected. You're probably going to want to look at the specs. That's information. That's all it is. That's all we're doing, right? I'll give you an example. So there's a player that I've known since junior when he was in Kitchener, Gabe Landeskog, really smart guy, really good player, obviously, right? Understands what he can do, what he can't do. I remember him telling me a few years ago, he wanted to score 30 goals, hadn't scored 30 goals in his career. And he did this all on his own. So what I add is just after the fact, this is total credit to him. But so he's like, well, how can I score 30 goals? Well, I'm, you know, power forward, net front type player. That's where I get a lot of my looks. Well, how can I be better in front of the net? Well, deflecting pucks. So he goes and watches video on YouTube of Anders Lee, of Joe Pavelski. He works with his coaches every day on improving his technique to deflecting pucks. Well, what does he do the next season? He leads the league in deflection goals. The difference that he had in deflection goals from the year before to the year after was literally the difference in him getting to 34 goals on that year. And he did that on his own. Now I can tell him, you know what? Absolutely do that, because the odds of scoring on a deflection are this compared to a standard shot from here, which is that, and it does improve your odds. And you can work together to come up with, you know, the best way to stay within your own game, but still get more meaningful results out of it. So that's all it is. It's information, right? Now, if hypothetically, if that player had come to me and said, okay, I know a lot of goals are scored off the rush. Look at what Connor McDavid's doing. You know, how can I do that? Well, maybe you can't do what McDavid's doing exactly, right? But, you know, he's a smart guy. He knows that. But that's where you can, you know, work with a player and try to identify those areas that they're already good at, but could be better at. And I'm a big believer, and you guys, you know, played high level hockey. You can speak to this too, but I'm a big believer in how can you get 2% better just about everywhere, as opposed to what's this holy grail and how can I get it? I don't see it that way.
We talk about that like literally every podcast.
I think Tope's favorite quote out of our 200 and however many episodes it's been now was Martin St. Louis saying, I wasn't the best skater. I wasn't the best shooter. I wasn't the best stick handler, but I was the best at getting better. And, you know, that's one of my favorite quotes too. And Tope always talks about that. And for any coaches or players listening, like, here's a way that not everybody understands how to use, you know, the analytics, but like, you know, dive into it, because like you said, if it gets you 1 or 2% better, that is moving the needle so far at the higher level. So it's massively important to keep getting out of your comfort zone, and information is power.
Totally. And I mean, I had a player once, you know, we were just chatting casually. He wasn't really asking me anything specific, but how's your game going? Whatever. It's like halfway through the season. He's like, I don't know. I don't have any power play goals. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, I'll look into it. I'll get back to you. Guy plays on the right wall on the power play. I'm like, you literally have not attempted a shot from the right wall on the power play. Like when you are getting your shots, you're getting pushed back more towards the point. And you're obviously passing a lot as well, but like you gotta try to get into that dot, like, and if not inside the dots, to the dot, and shoot from there if you want to have a chance to score from where you play. He's like, whoa, I don't have a shot from there. Like, he didn't know that, so he could probably feel it to a degree. Maybe assumed he had a couple, but he was getting pushed back, you know, beyond the top of the circle a lot when he was shooting. So there's all sorts of things that you can just, you know, I guess put in someone's head, or just remind, refresh. Cole Caulfield this year, he had one goal in 30 games, right? And then he goes on this massive heater with the coaching change from Marty St. Louis. He wasn't getting into the areas that he and a lot of other players like him can score from with regularity, which is a high slot area. He doesn't need to go and stand in front of the net to score, but he's got a great shot. Wasn't getting there. Now, again, he probably knows that, but maybe when you show literally a shot chart and say, this is how infrequent it has been, and then how can we get you there? That's the other part, right? Easy to say to anyone, yeah, go here, and that's where you'll score from. How can we get you there? Why are you not getting there? And that's where I think there's great value in that back and forth with a coach or with a player, about how to make a lot of this stuff actionable.
How does that work? Like, do you guys have computers that are watching the game and every shot is tracked and plotted, or is it like by hand? Like how is that done?
It's a bit of a combination of both. We do. It's a lot of it is through our computer vision tracking system, and through machine learning as well. It not only identifies the players that are on the ice, but it learns to recognize the players by their tendencies. So it's kind of like, yeah, I know it's weird. It's like they're going to take over the world, these robots.
You see your face right now, man.
Yeah.
So we're getting taken over. It's done. Oh, yeah. We're gone.
So like the first thing, right, is you put in the roster information. So you're like, all right, Sidney Crosby's number 87. And when 87's on the ice, it identifies 87. There you go. But with machine learning, it actually starts to pick up on the tendencies of the player the same way that you do when you watch a game. Like if you guys are watching, you can recognize Sid on the ice before you see his jersey number. You know what way he shoots. You know how he skates, all those things. Same idea. So you're doing this, you know, in real time as it goes. And, you know, we've determined basically every event that a player can do on the ice, and it detects those different events. Now, if seven guys go into the corner to battle for a puck and it pops out, whatever, the computer system may not recognize who popped that puck out, but it'll flag the event as needing a human to go and identify that, right? So it's a bit of a combination, but yeah, mainly done through really incredible technology.
So are you using, like, you know, if the game is on whatever TSN, do you like somehow hook your technology up to their cameras? Do you, your company, have to put multiple cameras in a rink? Is it one camera? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, we use the broadcast feeds for that. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There you go, Vex. Yeah. That's how the sausage is.
I always wondered, like, how are they getting all of these numbers so fast? Because literally, when I signed with the Bruins, not a big deal, NHL team. I went to the AHL, in my first game, they had me watch up from up top the first two periods to, you know, see how the game is and stuff. And then the third period, I sat down in the dressing room in this like skate sharpening looking box that they opened up. It had a monitor and a computer, and I had to hit different keys. Like the question mark was meaning like I had a question on the play. Like an X was every time there was a shot. Y was every time there was this. And then the next day we went over like what keys I hit. So I'm sitting there just watching the game, like click, click, click. So it's obviously like so different than what's happening now. And that was in 2008, yeah, yeah, you know, so it's pretty cool.
Not like, that's different for a lot of people of what's happening now
that are doing that type of stuff. I mean, yeah, that's,
you have,
that's what
you
I was
have
wondering.
Guys on staff on NHL teams and college doing teams, that. Junior teams that are basically just coding a game.
Wow.
And you know, every team has different things that they track. You know, based
well,
on,
well, think
identity.
About scoring chances, right? Like we do. So when you are being objective about things and not subjective, and scoring chances are very subjective. You ask 32 head coaches in the NHL what a scoring chance is,
oh,
you're getting
boy.
32 different answers. So
fist
but
fights
for us,
in coaches' rooms over yeah. whether or not I've seen them. Like,
oh, I'm sure
a scoring chance. Like,
exactly. And you know, we had an analyst who's an ex-player, and you know, we identify the slot as the home plate area that you guys have probably seen, right? And that goes to the face-off dot. A guy got a shot like right from the outside, like on the cusp of it, right at the dot. It's like, that's not the slot. I'm like, well, it is in our definition of it. But scoring chances, right? How do you identify them? We have a very particular way. And if it happens, and we have to, and if it happens slightly outside of it, it's not a scoring chance, like 6 inches. But is it really if it is 6 inches the other way? And so it's never perfect. And that's why a lot of teams, they'll come up with their own definitions, right? On what they believe a scoring chance is, a high danger chance, whatever you want to do.
Hey guys, we'll get right back to this week's episode. But before we do, I want to talk to you a little bit about HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Ingredients travel from farm to your house in under a week, so they always arrive fresh and all without a trip to the grocery store or the farmer's market. You can pick your favorites from up to 50 different weekly options and skip weeks when you need to, change your delivery date, or update your preferences all in the HelloFresh app. Guys, I use this, and with a family of five, with three kids under five, any way that you can have a healthy meal where you can also save some time and save some money, it's an unbelievable value add. So we use this with our family, and it's been really, really helpful just in getting things ready, and also helps a little bit in the wallet as well. So go to HelloFresh.com/ThinkTank16 and use the code ThinkTank16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/ThinkTank16 and use the code ThinkTank16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Thank you so much. And now let's head it back to the show. Now, your definition of scoring chances, that comes from a lot of research, right? Like, you guys have obviously watched the game, tagged a bunch of games, have all this different information. And I mean, you have a couple pops after games with different coaches or on the road recruiting and stuff. This always comes up. Like, it's a huge question. What is a scoring chance and what is not?
Yeah.
So for you guys at SportLogic and all the information that you've had, I think it would be good. Like, how do you guys define a scoring chance? What's important to a play? And I know there's a lot of different things that go into it, and that's a big question. But if you can just give us kind of like a little bit of a elevator pitch of kind of what you guys believe.
So,
is scoring chances.
Yeah. So scoring chances for us is just one thing. We did not arbitrarily choose locations on the ice that we know matter. We looked at historical data and said, okay, well, where are goals coming from? And we created an image and an area based on that. We didn't come up with it just because it looks like a house or looks like something. and say, okay, well, that's important. So the area I'm talking about is the inner slot, what we call the inner slot. It's a diamond shaped area that goes from the posts out and then kind of cuts in to just about the top of the hash marks. And that we in tracking goals historically, you know, thousands of them, this is where 50% of them come from. So we know that that's a good dangerous scoring area on the ice, the most dangerous scoring area on the ice. That home plate area that a lot of people are familiar with, that's where 75% of goals come from. But in terms of, you know, what's a dangerous chance, what isn't, we go a little more granular and look at an expected goals model. And you may have heard the term expected goals, and it drives some people crazy because they, you know, what's an expected goal? It went in or it didn't, and you get into that whole thing. But really all it is the probability of the shot going in. And so if you have a guy standing in a good scoring area and he gets a pass and he's not moving his feet and it's a shot on net and there's no traffic, that expected goal value is going to be different than if it's shot from the exact same spot, but it's a cross ice one timer and there is traffic in front. That's more dangerous, right? Well, we know that because we have thousands and thousands of samples of these shots to go over and look at the historical probability of it going in. So I wouldn't even, if I wanted to assess, well, how dangerous was that scoring play? I wouldn't even look at, was it a chance or not? Where did it come from or not? I'd look at the expected goal value of the shot and the sequence behind it. That really tells you a lot more.
Wow. So if a puck's coming across, right, and one timer, but there's a D-man, right? Let's say there's two D-men in the lane between the shooter and the net. That versus if there's nobody in between them is going to be a different value.
Yes.
Wow. So yeah. Like, I mean, obviously, but like, so when you guys are doing this and breaking down games, like there's got to be a lot more human side to that than a computer. Cause a computer, it can't compute all that. Can it? Or can it?
It can.
yes.
Yeah. Well, it's just detecting, you know, what traffic is in the shooting lane. Is there a player in the shooting lane between the goalie and the puck? So we have one of the things we track is screenshots. How many screenshots? What percentage of shots are screened? It's good for goaltending insights. How does a goalie perform when there's traffic versus when there isn't? Yeah, going to a lot of depth.
Wow. So do you have a lot of these numbers like kind of at the tip of your tongue? Like if people ask, like, you know, what is the percentages of, you know, shots that get through for D-men from the point, or is a slap shot better than a wrist shot? Like, can you rip those off, or do you got to kind of like look at them?
As much as I can. I guess that's the benefit of going through this stuff every day for years, is you get pretty familiar with it. Yeah, you know, knowing the difference between a rush chance and a cycle chance, or, you know, different ozone possession times and how valuable that is for certain teams, for certain players. Yeah, like you know, it's funny, like a 3-on-2, actually the shooting percentage on a 3-on-2 isn't that much higher than just an average shooting percentage. That was one thing that kind of surprised me when I remember when I got into this stuff is a breakaway is very dangerous, shocker. Needed analytics for that one. A 2-on-1 is very dangerous. A 3-on-2, it actually drops a fair bit, more than I would have expected. You know, another thing that I found interesting when I got into this type of work is puck possession. Like how much, let's pick a great player. Pick a player who you think is like an elite puck possession player on a stick, creative. Like who would you think of?
Crosby comes to mind for me.
Okay, Crosby.
Yeah.
So let's say Sid plays 20 minutes in a game. Roughly on average, how much do you think the puck is on his stick?
Minute and a half.
Minute 48. Sid, 212.
Yeah, it'd be a little less than 212, but you're not far off. It'd probably be about 120, 130 in that range. Like the top guys in the league will have the puck in the offensive zone on their stick for about a minute per game. Which isn't a ton. And you think about like, okay, so let's say that's McDavid and he plays, you know, 21 minutes a night, whatever. And he's got the puck for a minute. And I think it was 9 seconds per game this year. 90% of the time he's on the ice, he doesn't have the puck. And that's where I start thinking about, and Marty St. Louis referenced this when he took over with the Habs. And I've talked to coaches about this. He talked about practice, right? How can we take the information we know and view our practice habits? Well, if your best players have the puck 10% of the time they're on the ice, what's happening the other 90% of the time? how much do you practice with the puck and around the puck versus without it, and what you're doing to get it back or be in a different position. You know, a project I did with a coach, we talked about what's successful in the playoffs. So much of it came back to what happens in the neutral zone. How are you defending entries? When you do disrupt an entry, how are you getting the puck out? Are you getting it out? How are you transitioning, regrouping, quick upping? Massively important stuff. How much of the time that, you know, a team is practicing in general at whatever level, are you looking about, you know, kind of top of the circle to top of the circle and how you're swinging? I view it as a pendulum, right? If you can control that area, you swing and play the other way, versus just O-zone practice and D-zone practice. So those are things that I think about.
So let me add to that, or not add to that, but I've always been a huge believer, and I'll talk to anybody that I can, that the neutral zone wins a hockey game. The neutral zone is the zone that determines what happens in the D zone or what happens in the O zone based on, you know, how much success you have on your entries and, you know, things like that. So that was actually a question that I had for you, semi answered it, but like, I believe that the neutral zone is everything. You need to practice it a lot in practice. Yeah. Is there data validity to what to that? Is there data validity to that? And then for you, like, what are important things if you want to win hockey games that a team needs to do in the neutral zone, both offensively and defensively, to have success?
Yeah. So like I said, when I went through this project, a lot of it was, there were a lot of really key things that successful playoff teams over the last 4 years, it tied together to the neutral zone specifically. And that kind of, you know, piqued my attention. Some were directly related to play in it, and others were about what you're doing once you get through in the O zone, or once when the other team does, how you're defending it. One thing that really stood out was the ability to not even deny an entry at the blue line, but to limit a successful play on an entry. So you can let a guy go wide, you can go down to the bottom of the circle, but kill that next play. Don't let him make that cycle pass. Don't let him cut to the net, and then successfully exit it. And it doesn't matter if you're dumping it out or making a possession play, ideally, but being able to kill that first play and get the puck out, it kind of sounds, yeah, no kidding, right? You want to do that. But to see how important it was something that I really paid attention to. Turnovers in the neutral zone are obviously killer. You don't want to do that. But yeah, like I said, a lot of it came back to that. How often can you take the puck from your opponent in the neutral zone and not turn it over, et cetera? Being able to get in offensively, it's all counterbalances itself, offense and defense. But a lot of good teams that have been to the Final Four, that have been to the Cup Final, Tampa winning Cups, but same with Washington, St. Louis, being able to control play there, like you said, hugely important. And I think it does vary team by team too, right? Like, look at Carolina and look at Florida, two very good teams.
Very different.
Very different. Carolina dumps it in more than anybody. Florida dumps it in the least of any team. Very different in how they play in the neutral zone. Carolina dumps it out more than anybody. They don't play that typical, you know, hang on to the puck possession type game, but they're in your face all the time, and they're winning pucks back more than anybody. And, you know, I've had some conversations with Barry Trotz about just philosophy, and I believe something that he believes as well: puck management is more important than puck possession. And you can play a puck possession style game by giving the puck up, as long as you have a recovery plan. And in the playoffs, that is essential. You don't have that space. Look at what the Capitals are doing right now, right? They're jamming Florida up through the neutral zone in a big way, and it's frustrating the hell out of them.
Yeah.
But really good teams can beat you in a number of ways. Florida can do it too in the O zone, but you got to be able to give the puck up and get it back. Tampa Bay learned that lesson when they got swept by Columbus. Great counterattack team, great defensive team. And then they win two cups. That was a huge lesson. I think they learned the value in being able to give it up and get it back.
For sure. And I want to keep going with this because I get asked a lot, especially at the youth levels, you know, for people who are interested in analytics, you know, what are things we should track? You know, what are things we should do? And a lot of the times we're big on identity. Vex and I talk about identity all the time. And I think your analytics need to have a conversation, or need to be a big part of the conversation when you're talking about identity. You talked about it there. Carolina has an identity. You know, they're relentless on the forecheck, relentless on the track. It just kind of like a Rod Brind'Amour type team, you know. And then Florida, a lot different. They got a lot of skilled guys. They like to make plays through the neutral zone, and it works for both of them. And then there's no right or wrong answer. It just, if you want to pick some things to track, what type of team do you want to be? I think that's the first question that you need to ask, and then use some data tools and use some things that can help you to paint a picture of if you're being, if you're playing like you want to be for your identity, you know? So I think that's a great point, because, you know, there's not one way to skin a cat. There's not one typical team that you have to be to win. There are certain things that you probably have to do, like puck management and things like that. But at the end of the day, you can win in different ways, and data can tell those different stories.
That is such a good point you make. And I totally believe that in that as well. That old saying, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it'll live its whole life thinking it's an idiot, right? So if you judge Carolina by their ability to attack off the rush, well, they were second fewest rush chances of any team in the league. Not very good. It's not how they want to play. If Florida tried to play like Carolina, vice versa, probably not ideal based on their roster. So I think that's totally it. I remember an assistant coach in the NHL called me, and we're talking about game reports and what they value and et cetera. And he said, you know, I get these reports sometime from our guys, and you know, it says we're red, we're really bad in certain areas, but like, we're not trying to do those things. So we had a good discussion about, you know, a game report is valuable because there are things, you know, if you're coaching and you've got a system and you're setting things up and you're executing that, but it's not leading to the fundamental truths that we know are important about a game, high expected goals, a lot of inner slot shots, whatever. Well, there's something wrong with what you're trying to do, even though you're achieving it. So there's the fundamental truths and then how you get there. And you can get there, like you said, in a lot of different ways. But that's the value, what I call, you know, a game report and a style report. Both are valuable, and you need to look at both. Are we doing the things that we know have to be done to be successful in the game of hockey? And also, what does our process look like? Are we doing the things that we're trying to coach our players to get them to do? And that could be, again, very different depending on the type of team you have. But I'm with you. Yeah, if you're at the youth level, well, look at, you know, how many shots are you getting versus giving up? Where are the shots coming from? Those are basic things that kind of hold true that are easy to chart. You know, Jeff's got experience from his days in the National, not a big deal.
Preseason.
Yeah, preseason. Hey, you're a talent evaluator now. That's good.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, at the youth level, I think just looking at, you know, shot volume, shot quality, those are basic things to kind of get you started on the right track, see how your team's playing.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, just when it comes to certain stats to take, and this is, you know, one that coaches talk about a lot too, is turnovers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we know that turnovers can be very bad in terms of counterattacking, especially at the blue line. However, there are other coaches that say you can't track turnovers. You don't want to post turnovers. You don't want your players to know about their turnovers, because then they're going to be afraid to make a play. They don't want to turn a puck over. And we've had a bunch of different discussions at Cornell when I was coaching there about that, because it is, there's this like give and take with it. You don't want to turn a lot of pucks over because then you're going to be playing a lot of defense, but you don't want to talk about it all the time because then the kids aren't going to want to play and make plays. So for the coaches out there in your realm, having all of this data, how would you go about talking to coaches in terms of how they should be talking to their team about turnovers?
That's a good question.
It's a really tough one
because it's not apples to apples, right? You can make a turnover that is so egregious at such a bad time in the game, and it's not the same as a turnover that is less egregious in, you know, the first period and whatever. It doesn't really matter that much. When you're talking about charting them, they appear the same. It's a turnover. So I think context has to matter. I mean, that's why I go back to puck management and puck possession. If you are, when I look at turnovers, because you know the way that I would evaluate a turnover is, did you forfeit puck possession and that led to the other team recovering the puck? And that happens a lot in a game, you know, a lot. So if you're going to nitpick every single one on every single person, there's going to be a lot of noise there. A coach with his eyes can see how bad a turnover was. Are you up by a goal and it's at the offensive blue line with a minute left? That's bad, right? And you want to cut those out. But what happens off turnovers as well is something I look at. So, okay, maybe we've got a guy who turns the puck over, you know, a fair bit, but nothing ever bad really seems to come from it. Maybe he's turning it over in areas where he knows he has support and he can afford to make a play. Maybe we got another guy. Well, why are so many of his turnovers leading to scoring chances or goals? And then you look at the video and investigate why that is. Well, maybe he's the high guy or he's the last guy and he's turning a puck over in a spot where he shouldn't be trying to make a play. That's where I think you got to go with a little more granularity into not just the what, as Jeff talks about, but the why and the how. With something like that, I think that's very important. Like one thing, you know, we talk about the Maple Leafs and an inability to get past the first round and kind of hold on to these series leads they've built up in years past. And I'm fascinated by this because I don't really have an answer, but they give up a disproportionate amount of goals off turnovers to other teams in the postseason. That tells me a couple things, though. Number one, if such a high percentage of the goals are giving up at 5-on-5 come off turnovers, well, it's not good. But that also means they're not allowing a lot of goals off just basic play. Their defensive structure must be pretty good. So how do you think about all these things and balance them and try to find the signal and all that noise? That's where it's just a continuous conversation, I think, that needs to be had.
Yeah, it's a great conversation. And I want to turn it the other way too, because you talk about turnovers from an offensive side in a bit of a negative way, but also a huge stat in your world right now is takeaways and the ability to cause turnovers. So if you can, talk a little bit about the importance of that stat. Are a lot of people keeping track of it? And I'd love to have a discussion just on how important it is and how we can force turnovers too from a coaching standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the play style kind of comes into that a little bit where, again, you got a team like Carolina, where they're going to give the puck up a lot. They're going to dump it out. They have to get it back. They're going to dump it in. They have to get it back. They do those things a lot. So they do have a lot of takeaways, but then, you know, they feel confident in their ability to do that. And that's about managing risk a lot of the time, right? Cause it's, you know, straight up offensively, it's not ideal to constantly be having to get into those kind of battles. So a bit of it is play style. How can you cause more takeaways? Yin and yang, right? Because you can be aggressive in the defensive zone, trying to close time and space, but you don't want to get walked either and create odd man situations for yourself. So I guess you probably have to look at what your team's trying to do and the kind of players that you have, and game situation, probably a part of it as well. Do you want to be more aggressive at certain times than others? I don't know that that's something that really has a black and white answer, but would probably just be kind of case by case and what you think your players are capable of.
Do you have any players that reach out to you specifically and are just like, help me, let's go through my game? Like, is that something
you just talked about Landeskog?
I know, but he said kind of Landeskog did on his own. They kind of went back and forth, like all this information, man, like, you know, like we talked about earlier, like trying to get that 1% better, finding any way it could. Yeah. Like if I'm an NHL player, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm reaching out to Mike and I'm going to be like, hey, you know, what's it cost to comb through my game here? And let's find some things that you're noticing, like, whoa, all my goals are coming from here. Or I get a lot of turnovers here, or that, you know, all the stats that you kind of put together. Is that something that you're doing and guys are coming to you, or is it more like team stuff?
I know it's happened. There's guys that I've known in the league for a long time. There's others that I don't know that well that have reached out. You know, there's a goalie who was playing in the KHL this past year, who'd been in the NHL with a couple of teams before, mainly in a backup role, trying to work his way back to the NHL, and just said, you know, hey, can we just go through whatever information you think is relevant and, you know, help me try to find weaknesses I can work on, strengths. And that stuff's interesting because, you know, you guys know your game really well for the most part, right? But like you said, if there's a couple things, and there always are, that say, wow, you know, I didn't know that I do that much, or I'm not that good there. That's that 1-2% that you can say, okay, I guess I need to pay more attention to that. And that's where I think that you can add value to some degree, right? And so, yeah, I've had those conversations with some guys over the years. You know, years ago, I did work with a player throughout an entire year, and he really wanted to compare himself to a couple of other guys that he viewed as, you know, that's where I think my game can be. That's what I want to get to. That's staying within that player archetype of what you are, right? That's why I'm a big believer in, you know, not this is the best player, this is the worst, and here's everything in between, but here's the type of player you are. Here's your player archetype. What is it that you can do well, do better to be the best version of yourself? The fish analogy again, right? So That's what I'm a big believer in is, you know, what kind of player are you? How can we help you get a little bit better? I didn't work with the player, but I was doing some analysis in Chicago a couple of years ago and looking at Patrick Kane and shooting optimization. Are guys getting to areas where they score from as often as they should be? He scores a ton of goals from the high slot. Doesn't have the hardest shot, but he's a pass threat, which I think makes goalies a little jumpy. And he's super accurate with a shot, right? So he scores a lot from there. And he was someone that was drifting a little bit and shooting way disproportionately from above the top of the circles relative to other forwards and relative to how often you can score from there, which is not a lot. So that's something where you say, if you can say to that player or the team, okay, sometimes you're pushed there and there's nothing you can do, right? I get it. But just knowing this, how can we get you the puck a little lower? How can you get yourself a little lower more often? Because you can score from there a lot. And a friend of mine in Chicago, I guess, you know, passed him some of that information. And, you know, his thought was he didn't know that he scored that much from there. So again, I think those kind of things can just kind of help put those thoughts in your mind, right? Of, well, that is something I do really well. I should really, you know, hone in on that as much as I can.
You probably get that a lot where you just provide some information and people are like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sometimes, you know, not so much. Like that's what a great learning lesson for me. And I think I've gotten better at it, which is there are some things that are not practical that you can say, okay, well, the data tells us this. And a coach might tell you, well, we can't do that. Or it's not practical to do that often or in these situations. And that's where you go back again. And you just constantly do this back and forth to try to get to a point where you can make this information actionable and it's meaningful. And that's where I think you stop getting pushback. Everybody wants to win, right? If I can come to you guys and say, I bet you I can get your podcast 10% more viewers.
Let's go.
And if I can, let's go, right? And if it's analytics, if it's whatever, you probably don't care, right? But if I can prove to you, yeah, I can improve performance, then it's all good. And if you can get to that level with even somebody who's historically more traditional in their evaluation, if you can get that buy-in, then you're set. Everybody wants to get better. And, you know, I think we're able to do a better job of that now than in the past. And that just comes from experience.
Oh, for sure. And yeah, that's one of the biggest things that I think you're getting a lot more from the let's call it the old school Vex, I think is what you called it earlier, is you're getting a lot more buy-in from some of those people now. The painting of the picture that you guys do for hockey in the analytics community is fantastic. And it just helps tell a different story of how things happen and why things happen. And then those people can take that information and do what they want with it. They can do it individually. They can do a team. There's so many different things. So information is power. And you guys have given so much great information to a lot of different people.
Yeah, I'll say something too that I guess it doesn't surprise me, but it's interesting. So, you know, whether it's people in hockey that have reached out or people on the broadcast side, ex-players, analysts that I work with in our company and our team work with, it's been a commonality I've noticed. A lot of the people really interested and really invested are people who are, you would look at and say, you're among the best at what you do. And I find that fascinating because it's like, you might need the least amount of help, but you're the one that wants the most help. Maybe that's why you're the best, right?
Not maybe. And that maybe, is why.
That is why. And I find that fascinating. I remember an analyst who I regard as maybe the best analyst in the game. Certainly one of them wanted to reach out when he was in town. We went and had lunch. We talked for 4 hours. And he was just so interested and invested in this and uses the information and what he does. I'm like, you're the last one that needs this. You see the game so well, but now it's even better, right? And that's what I think make the best. Like, what do we talk about Crosby all the time? He's a grinder who happens to be one of the most talented hockey players in the world, but he's a grinder and he works, you know, harder than anybody. So I find that interesting. And that's just something that goes beyond analytics, I guess, just work ethic in any walk of life. The best just always want to get better. And if they see a way that they think they can do that, they doesn't matter if what it's called, they're going to do it.
On this show, Mike, we call that give more, be more. Am I right, Toph? What's up?
Oh my God.
Get the t-shirts made. I like it.
Hey, that's my clothing line. Got it tattooed on me, baby. Not an accident here. I have one last question for you because I know Toph's going to wrap it up here. But
sure.
And I don't even know if you can answer this. But if you only could go off of one stat in the NHL like what, and I know that's impossible and it's not realistic, but let's play the game, guys. Okay. We're having fun podcast here. It's Wednesday. We're going crazy. If you could only say this one stat, what would you say right now is probably the most important stat?
Goals.
If you had to choose. All right. Other than goals,
wins even more than goals.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going to get a team to win? If you only had to choose one, gun to your head.
Expected goals. Because it's an onion. You want to win, you got to score more than your opponent. You want to score more than your opponent, you have to have higher probability of shots to become goals, and that's expected goals. You want to have a higher expected goals than your opponents? Well, now you get into chance types. And you continue to peel the onion back and back and back. So if wins is too obvious and goals is too obvious, then I'm going with expected goals, which is just the probability of the shots you create.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Love it. Love it. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time here today. This was an awesome conversation. We really appreciate it. We know you're a busy, busy man. So can't wait to see what you have next on social media and on TV. And I think this is going to go a long way, teach a lot of people stuff about the game. So we really appreciate it. And best of luck. And if you ever need anything from us, then never hesitate to reach out. But this was great.
No, let's keep in touch. Like I said, I follow your guys' account on Twitter. You post some really cool stuff. So keep in touch for sure. And Jeff, we're going to get you working at our company, tagging some video for us too. You got the experience. You can put analytics guy on your resume.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike.